Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. I'm your host, Vaibhav Maradian, and joining us today at the start of National Cybersecurity Awareness Month is one of the two congressmen who chaired the Future of Defense Task Force, Massachusetts Democrat Seth Moulton, a former Marine and Democratic presidential candidate who worked closely with Indiana Republican Jim Banks, a Navy Reserve intelligence officer, on what is considered a truly bipartisan roadmap to make the kind of trade-offs the nation needs to bolster its long-term national security. Today, we're going to focus on the cyber aspects of the task force report. And unfortunately, Mr. Banks couldn't join us, but he and Mr. Moulton will be back on soon for a deeper dive on the report itself. Congressman Moulton, thanks so very much for joining us.
Vago, it's great to be here.
First, congratulations on a truly thoughtful and different document on the national security challenges facing the nation and what to do about them. Central is to stop doing some of what we're doing now in order to free resources to better prepare for a more contested future and to prepare for that contested future on a flat budget at best and declining at worst. Let's start with the cyber elements of the report.
Well, we have to do a lot because this is a new battleground and we're just not adequately prepared for it. Our adversaries are taking advantage of cyber, not just in a traditional military context, but in a political context. I mean, this is exactly what Russia is doing to try to undermine the elections, both here at home in America and with our allies across the globe. And they're being pretty successful because we don't have a concerted effort to push back. And we have more of an effort now than we did in 2016, for sure. In fact, I was briefed on that yesterday. And it's probably much more robust than most Americans recognize. But the fact that we were so late to the game, the fact that we were completely caught with our pants down in 2016, totally unprepared for this outright assault on democracy, is just one blatant example of how we need to do more to be ready for cyber.
So talk to us a little bit about some of the mechanical suggestions that get us to where we need to get to, right? I mean, there's a national and citizenry education piece, obviously, but you guys track whether it's for different sorts of connections between CISA and Homeland Security and how DOD has to play into it. We've got supply chain and the industrial base you want to bring into it. Talk to us about sort of the macro, the specifics that get us to that macro better security goal that you guys have highlighted in your report.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, first of all, I think it is important to say that this is a strategic level report, right? So we're not getting into the deep, deep details of exactly how we need to fix this problem. But we do have some very specific recommendations. And if you go to the recommendations section of our report, number five is quite comprehensive on this. And first of all, we say that, look, we're not prepared and we're vulnerable to attacks against civilian populations through infrastructure, financial institutions, healthcare facilities, among many other things. And we're not even talking about the military vulnerabilities that we have. But there's this recognition now that the United States needs to prioritize defenses not only for just basic military capabilities, but the sort of gray zone between the Department of Defense and the private sector. This gray zone where warfare is not just about taking out troops, but it's sending little green men in to influence elections and undermine local politicians. So some of the things that we need to do, we've outlined here. We need to examine the relationship between executive branch departments and agencies with independent regulatory agencies overseeing critical infrastructure sectors so that we understand that cybersecurity information is shared by default rather than by exception. We need to create parity between the defense industrial base and other critical infrastructure sectors by establishing an independent regulatory agency to define and enforce cybersecurity standards. We don't really have nationwide cybersecurity standards. Everybody's kind of on their own program. And that's something that we need to do. And we need to ensure that there are financial penalties against non-compliance, especially for defense contractors. We need to bolster the partnership between U.S. Cyber Command and the Department of Homeland Security. We need to develop tactical cyber operational forces within the military services and carefully integrate them into conventional kinetic operations. Our adversaries are often kicking off operations with cyber. We need to be prepared to do the same. we have to recognize that many of the Pentagon's major weapons systems are in fact vulnerable to cyber intrusion and disruption. So even while we have this, I think, real focus on the gray zone, this this uncertain hybrid warfare area, where I think the United States is particularly behind, we also have to recognize that our major weapon systems, some of our critical ones, do have their own cyber vulnerabilities. And so in a much more traditional sense, we need to protect them. And then we also have to more holistically, as a government, create tax and other financial incentives for the private sector to invest in cybersecurity and prepare for these kinds of attacks. Because we know that our adversaries are not just going to go after our troops, after our military, they're going to go after our private sector too. And we all have to be on the same page with how we're going to identify, deter, defend, and protect.
You know, the Cyber Solarium Commission, Senator Angus King, the Independent of Maine, and Mike Gallagher, your colleague and former Marine as well, the Republican from Wisconsin, produced what was really an extraordinary work. It's affecting the legislative process now. There are folks who would like it to be embraced and enacted a lot more holistically and more completely. How does that, you know, how are your two efforts linked in this to make sure, because, right, they proposed also a whole series of organizational as well as legislative changes, right? I mean, the myriad of congressional committees that have oversight, you know, is there a way of cyber to sort of make it more holistic? How did you guys work together to make sure that that sight picture of the cyber enterprise was as joined up at the end of the day as possible?
Well, I think you'll find that our findings and recommendations are very consistent with what the Cyber Solarium proposes to do. And as part of the testimony for the task force, we learn more about that project and of course, you know, embrace and support their recommendations. Our task force, of course, is looking much broader than more broadly than just cyber. So it encompasses a whole range of things that we need to do to prepare for 21st century warfare, to prepare for where our adversaries are going very quickly, to make sure that we are safe and secure for the next 30 to 50 years. But there's no question that cyber is a big focus, and it's a place where we are falling behind and we need to do more. So I think that one of the places where you'll see a lot of alignment is this whole concept that we need to take a whole of government approach to national security. This cannot just fall on the Department of Defense. And that's something that's a thread that you'll see throughout our report. And I think it's consistent with the recommendations coming out of the Cyber Solarium.
Let me ask you, I mean, the Department of Defense has gone to the CMMC model, the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification Process, very indelicately named, to have company, you know, sort of like a home inspection kind of format, right? Allow companies to be certified much more quickly. It's an effort to get that ball rolling. Folks say, you know, it's not an end in itself, but it's an important step. What you guys are proposing, I mean, what you're proposing is much, much more rigorous than that. How do you see current efforts connecting with the more ambitious efforts that you guys are articulating in this report?
We hope that these current efforts will just point us in the right direction and get us started. But again, one of the threads I think you'll see throughout this report is a recognition that this threat is much more urgent than most Americans, most colleagues in Congress appreciate. And of course, I'm not just talking about the cyber threat specifically. I'm talking about the threat of a rising China and Russia with real new capabilities that that aim to leapfrog our own. One of the top line findings in the report is that we are losing this race today. This isn't a race that we might lose in the future if we don't make some new investments. This is a race that we are losing today. And we should be prepared for a world dominated by authoritarian China if we don't make some dramatic changes in our national security. And we've got to do it right now. Our hope is that, yes, there are some efforts that are heading in the right direction, and we support those. But we also have to recognize that a much more robust undertaking is necessary.
And how much of a window, you know, you say right now, Congress can move very, very fast and the government can move fast, but historically, sadly, not as fast as I think how quickly this threat is moving. As somebody who's been studying this intimately, you know, A, having knowledge of it before you picked this up, but certainly gained a lot of knowledge over the course of the hearings and conversations you've had, some of which I've gotten feedback sort of after and before the fact. How big is our window before we've really got to get a handle on this, right? I mean, so what you tell your colleagues, is it 5 years? Is it 2 years? What's the window?
I mean, this is just so urgent. And that's, I think, the most important message in the report. I don't know that there's been a time before where Democrats and Republicans have been so united in recognizing that, wow, we need to make some dramatic changes right away, or we are in big trouble as a country. And dramatic changes means not only investing in new capabilities, like the kinds of things that we've been talking about with respect to cyber this morning, but also cutting old weapon systems, cutting legacy systems that are outdated and too expensive to maintain, so that we have room in the budget to make these new investments, so that we have room in our capabilities and the simple bandwidth of the DoD to embrace these new technologies. And we should be spending multiples on cyber compared to what we're spending today, but that also means we should be spending a lot less on big old heavy weapon systems that this sort of military, industrial, congressional complex, as John McCain often referred to it, like to keep around just because they represent jobs in our districts. We've got to realize now that this is not about jobs in our districts. This is about the national security of the United States. And I think that's one of the most powerful bipartisan recommendations coming out of this report.
I would agree, and we're going to have you and Mr. Banks on together to talk about the deeper elements of this, because we talked at the Halifax International Security Forum, and we've talked since about how you get sort of lawmakers aboard on this, and you guys do have some very specific recommendations, starting with, you know, a think tank like RAND, putting together what might no longer be necessary, and then a congressional DoD industrial base representation on a panel to sort of talk through some of the issues on this and what are the incentives in place. And obviously you guys have some investment rules as well. Let me just go back to cyber for a moment. Does the department and the U.S. government have to declassify more of these cyber episodes, because they historically are so classified that it's masked the degree of alarm people should have, right? I mean, as a general rule, bad news sort of focuses the mind, right? I mean, people go, oh my God, that was bad. We have to stop that from happening again. Whereas if all but a handful of people with the highest security clearances are the ones who see this stuff and then don't share it for fear of compromising intelligence, at the end of the day, people don't know how bad the picture is, whereas you've seen it and you see it for how terrifying it is, right? Do we have to do a better job of sharing some of this information, not just more widely within government, but also with the American public, to get them as terrified as they need to be about this? I mean, without obviously fueling panic, of course.
Well, it's a good question. And I think that it's probably safe to say that in general, in today's world, in the United States government and DoD more specifically, there's a bit of overclassification going on. But at the same time, I mean, we have a president of the United States right now who leaks classified information. There's a reason why we have to tighten the screws in certain places. So in general, this is a challenge that's going to be with us, you know, henceforth, right? We're always going to be trying to figure out exactly what we should share and what we need to keep close hold. But you're right. I mean, part of the problem here is that people don't know how bad it is. There are really good reasons why much of the classified information that we saw in the course of this investigation remains classified. That's very clear. That's very clear to us who have been in these briefings. In some cases, it's because we don't want our adversaries to understand our capabilities and our methods. And there can be other reasons too. But this is something we're going to have to keep getting into Vago. I don't know that there's a simple answer. It's something that I think we're going to have to keep struggling with as this threat evolves.
Well, we certainly want to be part of that, sir, because I think the work you guys have put together is really important, especially at a time when there's a bipartisan sense that there is a threat. We have to be doing stuff about it, but also will be some financial limitations. Let me ask you one brief question. Again, something I'd like to get into deeper with you and Mr. Banks together. But do you sense that lawmakers agree that it's a time for these kind of trade-offs? Because historically, you know, you mentioned what Senator McCain used to say, that goes back to Dwight Eisenhower and the, military-industrial complex, and he dropped off congressional because Jack Kennedy was taking office sort of a week later, and he didn't want to torpedo the prospects of the incoming president, certainly more in the older vein of bipartisan politics. But, you know, lawmakers have historically, you know, the department has wanted to make trade-offs. The department has wanted to retire capabilities, and lawmakers almost invariably become involved. Do lawmakers appreciate the need for change? And are they aboard, whether on this study or other efforts, to actually make that change?
The candid answer is no. And that's why we have a lot of work ahead of us. And that's why this report, which is so bipartisan, fully bipartisan, is so important. It's important to take this opportunity to point out that, you know, most committees or task forces assembled in Congress, if they are bipartisan, they have more members from the majority than from the minority. So in this case, we would have more Democrats than Republicans. That's not the case here. Right. 4-4, totally equal. So we all had to agree to these recommendations. And yes, they will very likely mean some cuts to jobs, to systems that are supported by our districts. Of course, it also means investing in a lot of new capabilities. Right. Many of those jobs will be in our districts too. But the point is that the imperative here is to protect our national security. And Jim and I and the others on the task force have a lot of work to do to educate our colleagues now about how serious and urgent this threat really is.
Very last question, because I know you've got to go. Do you think that this is going to be reflected in any FY22 legislation? I mean, will there be language, you think, in the House National Defense Authorization Act for 22?
I can tell you that's certainly the chairman's intent.
Thanks very, very much. We really, really appreciate it.
Take care. All the best.
Thanks for joining us this week. Please be sure to go to our website and check out past Cyber Report episodes, as well as our daily and weekly podcasts. Follow us on social media and sign up for our weekly newsletter to ensure you never miss the latest defense and aerospace report commentary and analysis. And finally, a very special thanks to Northrop Grumman for their cyber sponsorship. Visit northropgrumman.com/cyber to learn more. Thanks again for listening, and have a great week.